Tuesday, May 20th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Aaron. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello to you, Cherry Gregg.
Thank you so much. Hello to you, Avi Wolfman Aaron.
I don't know what was funny about that. I'm just saying hi.
It's so funny. Everybody uses my full name. So it's funny, yeah, not Cherry. Cherry Gregg.
Fair enough.
So today is it's a serious show today.
Yes.
Yeah, because the job market is flashing yellow lights for Gen Z, especially recent college grads. Unemployment for this group now stands at 5.8%. That is up sharply, fairly sharply, since just a few months ago. And it's not just bad luck, okay? There have been some shifts in the economy, including government cuts. There's been tariffs, all sorts of things, possibly even an artificial intelligence disruption. And so we're going to talk about that today on the show. And on top of it all, student loans payments.
Yeah, that's back on.
Are being reactivated, right? And, you know, a lot of folks are taking jobs where they're underemployed, right? So we're going to be talking about that. We have a couple of experts here. We're going to be taking some calls. And our big question for you, our listeners, is this. If you're a Gen Z job seeker, or you know someone, you love someone who is, what's been the most frustrating part of this current job market? We want you to give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to leave your comments and questions in the chat. And I really want you to dig in. Tell us your story, you know.
Yeah.
Are you still looking for a job? How long did it take you to get one if you were looking, right? Did you take a job you're overqualified for? We want to hear the nooks and crannies of this.
Yeah. And just to underscore something you said, that unemployment rate you cited is for college graduates.
Right? Not the,
And that's usually the folks who have a leg up in the job market, for better or for worse, right? And so that is, like you said, a blinking yellow light for many economists and, of course, the people who are seeking jobs as well. I would, you know, you can call, give your perspective, whatever it is, but, you know, probably don't do the whole avocado toast thing where you blame it on young people. Usually that's not the explanation. I don't know what the current version of avocado toast is, but remember, like, when millennials, they would say, well, you're not successful in life because you bought avocado toast or something, which, by the way, avocado toast
it's
is pretty
delicious,
good. Yeah.
Especially when you add bacon. I mean, come on.
What?
Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
I've never heard of that.
It's delicious.
Bacon on avocado toast?
Absolutely.
But doesn't that, because it's supposed to be healthy, that kind of undermines the whole.
Bacon isn't healthy?
That's a different show, I guess. anyways, yeah, so go ahead. Give us your perspectives. But this is a broader trend.
It is.
It's not anyone's moral failing, okay? So just, you know, if you're a Gen Z job seeker, if you know one, what is most frustrating about this job market? 888-477-9499. Now to a trio of local news stories, starting with the date. You mentioned it, May 20th, Tuesday, May 20th. It's primary election day here in Philadelphia. We've got a live blog up right now at whyy.org, so you can stay up to date on all the latest happenings on election day. The big, bold headline race is for Philadelphia District Attorney, two-term incumbent Larry Krasner versus Judge Patrick Dugan. No Republican running in the Republican primary for DA, so the primary winner on the Dem side is kind of a shoo-in. Also, Cherry, I know you're passionate about this. Lots of judicial races today.
Yep.
Always confusing because there are lots of people running and you can vote for many of them all at once.
Yep.
So before you vote, piece of advice, check out the Procrastinator's Guide to the 2025 primary election up at Billy Penn. It's always an amazing resource. Little bios of everyone running for the various judgeships.
Yeah. I want to mention that if you're voting in Philadelphia, there are three ballot questions. And so, you know, because usually this is for people who are party affiliated, these types of primaries, but that's for everyone. So if, even if you're an independent, you can still vote today on the ballot questions. And they relate to whether or not to create an office that advocates for homeless individuals and families, whether, you know, to boost spending on affordable housing. I mean, the mayor had that big plan. And then whether or not to create a new prison oversight office and board. So those are some things. I mean, they're important. And yeah. And we don't always have a big turnout on primary election day, but a lot gets decided.
Yeah, and I would add a fourth one. Should you put bacon on avocado toast? That could be the fourth ballot question. Let's get that on in November.
Let's get that on there, yeah.
Second story is really a very serious one. Yeah. And one that we've all been following for a while now. Go ahead, Chair.
Yeah, the big week in Philadelphia criminal court today. I mean, this week and today. The Philadelphia police officer who shot and killed Eddie Irizarry is on trial this week. 29-year-old Mark Dial, 5-year PPD veteran. He is charged with murder for shooting and killing Irizarry as he sat in his car in Kensington in August of 2023. The jury will decide whether Dial's shooting of Irizarry was justified or if it amounted to a crime. Just if you don't remember what happened, officers had claimed that Irizarry had been driving erratically. They sped up. They followed him as he turned, driving the wrong way down a residential street, parked his car, and then Dial jumped out of his car, immediately drawing his gun, and within seconds had fired multiple shots on Irizarry, who had been holding a knife while he was inside the car with the windows rolled up. The shots, of course, broke through those windows. Irizarry had been shot 6 times and he died in the hospital. The big thing is Dial's attorneys claim their client thought he heard his partner yell knife.
Right. There's two cops at the scene, right?
Partners, two. Yeah. Yeah. And Dial says, I thought I heard my partner say knife, which is why.
I thought he heard him say gun.
Gun.
Yes.
Gun.
Yeah.
And which is why he fired his shots. And so that's going to be a question
right,
for the jury.
Right, that's the basic, there's the facts
whether
are
not
really
they believe
not,
there.
Yeah, not yeah. really in dispute in terms of who shot and what exactly happened. But it's a question, at least so far in the trial, of what did Dial hear his partner say?
Yeah.
Did the partner say that the man in the car, Eddie Irizarry, had a knife? Or did he say that he
had a gun?
Thought he said he had a gun.
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to be interesting because there's been a lot of controversy about this case. If you remember, Avi, when it first came out, what the PPD told the public was actually different from what the footage showed.
Different. Yeah,
they actually had Irizarry out of the car. And that was not true. He was in the car with the window rolled up. There was a protest outside the courthouse this morning, been protests in the community over the past couple of years. And so a lot of people will be watching what happens in this case.
Multiple institutional mess ups here, because you mentioned the initial reporting from the police claiming that Irizarry was out of his car when he clearly was not. And then when this case was going to trial, the district attorney, Larry Krasner, was pursuing a first-degree murder charge.
Mm-hmm.
That's now been dropped to third-degree murder because of procedural things and the defense attorneys not getting information when they were supposed to get it. So just so much confusion around this story. But it is finally at trial, and a jury will finally hear the evidence and make their decision.
Yeah, we'll be watching it.
And the third story that we want to discuss was something that I saw in the Philadelphia Magazine yesterday. A really just incredible piece of journalism. I just want to read the headline real quick. Headline. WHYY's Cherry Gregg talks her badass husband, Wawa, and R. Kelly regrets. Yes, this is an interview with my partner, Cherry Gregg, that will run in the June issue of Philadelphia Magazine. It's part of a series that they do with local luminaries, little get-to-know-you interviews. And I have to give credit to the interviewer, Victor Fiorillo.
Shout out to Victor.
Because
yes.
He unearthed some facts about you that I straight up did not know.
And I feel like I've been an open book, Avi.
I wasn't asking the right questions, apparently.
Okay.
Let's start with this one.
Uh-huh.
This is how the interview starts. It says that your name, Cherry, could have been collared.
Yes.
You were almost named Collared Gregg.
That is a true statement. Yes, my mother verified it on Facebook today.
What's the backstory?
The backstory is my mom could only eat cherries and collard greens. And so she was going to name me Cherry or Collard. Luckily, my grandmother stepped in and went with Cherry.
She was really going
to
name
and
me Collard.
And she actually changed the Y to an I because, you know, to give me more options.
What?
for pronunciation. Yeah.
Oh, for how does that work?
Well, they were like, it's Cherie.
But oh.
It, you know. Anyway.
Usually when you give someone a name, it's not like a pick your own adventure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We wanted options.
I love the name Cherie, by the way.
Thank you.
Another thing that comes up in this interview, and I don't want to shy away from the tough stuff.
Okay.
Because they asked you to choose between Poconos and the Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And you took the Poconos.
I did.
You said, quote, too many rules at the Jersey Shore. I don't like the vibe.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, obviously that's going to offend a lot of people listening. So
sorry, guys.
Too many rules.
Yeah.
At the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, we're always talking about their dry beaches. You can't drink on the beach. They don't sell any alcohol. I like to have, you know, a cocktail.
Fair enough.
On the beach.
Yeah.
And take a nap. You know what I mean? And I don't want anybody, I don't want to get a citation because I have alcohol.
I'm going to back you up on that one.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. Speaking of alcohol, you also, they asked you if about your favorite drink, or if someone's making you a drink, what would you take? And you said anything with teeny on the end. T-I-N-I.
Yeah.
Isn't that just martini? What's the other teeny drink?
Well, they're all martini, like lemon kind, pomegranate.
Got it.
I don't just like regular
martini.
Like,
so yeah, you didn't want to answer martini because that's too,
it's
it makes
too
you
limited.
Seem too basic.
Mm-hmm.
You like all the different types of martini.
I do.
God, I just thought maybe is there some other like drink out there that ends in teeny that I'm not thinking of.
No, you can throw teeny on anything.
So what's your favorite of the teenies then? Let me one up Victor and get some information he didn't get.
I like pomegranates or lemon drops.
Mm.
Yeah, but not too sweet. I like them a little sour, yeah.
Too sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, can I just say it was a great interview.
Thank you.
You represented the show very well.
And Avi got a shout out in there.
I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. And also just generally, I think people should check it out because you know, you're a cool person. You have a really cool backstory.
Thank you.
And it gives people a little.
Oh my God!
It gives people a little taste.
Yeah.
Thank Cherie,
you, Victor. Thank you.
Not collared, Greg.
not collared. Thank God, Grandma. Thank you.
Thank God,
from
Grandma.
From the heavens.
So coming up, we're going to talk about the job market. It is especially bleak right now for young people, including college graduates. So why? Give us your takes. 888-477-9499. We'll be right back on Studio 2.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherie Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Now, before we get into all the downer stuff this hour, we just want to take a moment first at the top of the show to genuinely congratulate all the wonderful young people who just graduated from college. Congratulations.
Yeah, you did it. You made it.
You did it. And honestly, it is a huge accomplishment. And when I think back on those 4 years and all that led up to it, like, it's a lot of work that's put in.
Yeah, a lot of
grind.
And
it is a lifelong dream for a lot of young people and their families.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the good news.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the bad news.
Unemployment rates for recent college grads have shot up over the past few months. And there's a reason to think that this is not just a blip. Gen Zers might have to brace themselves for a tough road as they try to break into the working world.
So this hour, we want to explore what is driving that trend while diving into the economic and social ripple effects. With us on Zoom is Guy Berger. Guy studies the future of work and workers at the Burning Glass Institute. He was formerly the principal economist at LinkedIn. Guy, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And in studio, we've got Mike Robinson, director of the Community Hiring Initiative at Temple University. Mike, welcome back to Studio 2.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and for our question for you at home, our listeners, is this. If you're a Gen Z job seeker or you know one, what's the most frustrating thing about this job market? We really want to hear your stories. You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to drop your questions or comments on the chat.
I want to start with you, Guy Berger. Give us what the data is saying, the big red indicators in the data that suggests something's going on here that's worth paying attention to when it comes to young people, college grads, and unemployment.
Well, I think when we talk about the job market, whenever we, you know, you crack open your favorite newspaper the first Friday of the month and read what's going on with the job market, usually what you read is, you know, the unemployment rate's gone up a little bit, but it's still low. In an aggregate, that's true. And, you know, by historical standards, there are relatively few jobless people out there. But if you start breaking it down by age, you start noticing that for young people, the unemployment rate's gone up a lot more than for the general population. In particular, one segment that has been particularly hard hit is people in their early 20s, right after they finish college. And I think it's interesting because there are lots of alternative explanations. It's probably a mix of different explanations, but you know, in general, this is a hard time to be looking for work. And a lot of people that are looking for work are people that just finished their education and are looking for sort of the first leg up on the job ladder.
And real quick, how does the data right now compare to historical trends? Because I think the assumption most people have is you graduate from college, you have more options available to you. It's easier to break into the job market than for someone who does not have that degree. So how does right now compare to what we typically see or have seen in recent decades?
Well, I think the first thing to think about is it's still a nice thing to have a college degree. Call it people with a college degree, you know, earn more typically than people with just a high school diploma or with an associate degree. The unemployment rates for people with a BA tend to be much lower than for those with just a high school diploma. And so from that perspective, that's still true. However, you know, that advantage, that premium that you get for a college degree has been compressed. And I think things have changed in the job market in the last few years that have particularly hit young college grads hardest. If you think about it, leaving aside the brief period right after the pandemic, over the past 12 months, the average unemployment rate for people in their early 20s with just a BA is as high as it's been since 2015. So it's like a decade. And that was a, you know, a lot of people reflect back on the job market. They would say, you know what, that was an okay job market in aggregate, but not a great one. And so I think it's striking that they're feeling a lot of pain. Meanwhile, if you know, and this is also an environment that despite stories about layoffs, so far layoffs have been quite low. So you have this sort of insider-outsider job market. People with a college degree, they're in, you know, into their 30s, established in their career, that, you know, even if they're grumpy about their job, don't need to find a new one. They're doing okay. They're at low risk of layoffs. Meanwhile, somebody much younger than them, 10, 15, 20 years younger, that's sort of trying, just finished college and looking for a job, they're finding it hard. They're, you know, they're, it reminds them, I mean, of what they may have heard from people, their cousins that are 10 years older about what it was like right after the Great Recession.
And Mike, I want to bring you into the conversation a little bit, because you put together, you organize job fairs, you talk to a lot of people in this demographic seeking jobs. What are you hearing?
So with this demographic, we're talking about Gen Zers. There's a lot of layered dynamics that come with this group. Many of them are very demanding because post-COVID, they were in the driver's seat. You know, they can demand, I want to work at home. They could demand other types of flexible type of work situations, where now that we're out of that, companies are more close to the vest in their hiring, so they're slower in hiring folks. And now Gen Zers are finding that people aren't kowtowing to their interests and flexibility demands. So now we see that Gen Zers have to go into a poly work situation, where now, because the jobs aren't as plentiful, the jobs aren't paying as much as they would like, because sometimes their expectation is higher, they're finding themselves having to work multiple jobs in situations to make ends meet. And many Gen Zers are still at home as a result of that. And then you have the inflexibility issue, where many of them are still, you know, solidly wanting that flexibility to work from home, where they're limiting their employment options. So it's a layered situation as to why many of them aren't finding employment opportunities. But to Guy's point, you'll always find overall a college graduate will have less likely experience of being unemployed compared to somebody who has less
The
education.
advantage is still there. The relative advantage
Correct.
has struck.
Overall, yes.
Yeah, and my quick follow-up for you, Mike, is this. I want to talk about underemployment a little bit, because you wrote on Facebook recently, and I saw this: "Dear employers, stop asking for a bachelor and master's degree if you're only paying $15 an hour." And you had a very strong
A
response
lot of
from that.
response.
Are you seeing Gen Zers dealing with this? Like, just you know, people asking them for all these degrees, you got student loans, and they're not paying.
Yeah.
And that goes to my earlier point I just made about the poly work situation where Gen Zers are working multiple jobs because employers aren't paying as much as they would like.
Is it what they need? Because everything's expensive, right?
Correct. And so that's another conversation with the way the economy is going and the tariffs and other, you know, types of things that are influencing the job market, AI. There's a lot of things that are impacting the situation we're talking about. But in fairness to the Gen Zers, employers that are offering like lowball salaries because now they can, mm-hmm. because there, you know, is a plethora of people looking for work, not just Gen Zers. The employers are in the driver's seat where they can maybe lowball folks because mm-hmm. they know folks are going to, you know, look for multiple opportunities. That's the trend right now. People have multiple jobs to make ends meet. And so that's a challenge that Gen Zers are working against.
Let's bring in a caller now because we want to sort of mm-hmm. try to start unpacking why the job market seems to be shifting against these recent college grads. And David from Elkins Park on line one has a theory. David, you're on Studio 2. We're getting into the explanations portion of this show. Why do you think so many Gen Zers are finding it tough to break into the job market?
I think that people who are already in the market are anxious, and they're holding on to jobs, middle-level jobs, whatever the intermediate one is between entry-level and intermediate. So there isn't the space, but we continue to educate people and encourage people with enthusiasm. Like, if you get this, you can just zoom into this and find your place. And I think we've been doing that for years without creating a kind of employment infrastructure where we know that there are going to be ways to channel the new energy as it comes in. Also, the way the job market has shrunk as a result of the information age, that mm-hmm. there are now just things that can be done by computer that used to be done by a bunch of people. Can I offer a really fast story?
Real quick, super David. Fast. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Years ago, I went to watch fireworks on the East Side Highway of New York City, and you walk up an on-ramp, and they've closed off the highway so you can look at the fireworks. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the top, that's all the space there is. And so you're there waiting. But the people at the bottom of the ramp do not understand the concept of there being no space up mm-hmm. on the highway. So they just kept pushing and pushing on in frustration, and it got tight.
Yeah.
But there was no way to explain to somebody at the bottom of the ramp that there was no space for them on the East Side Highway. How was that possible?
Yeah, so that, well, sounds that's like a bad of, fireworks experience, first of all, David. So stick with Penn's Landing from now on. But also, obviously, that's a nice metaphor. So a couple of explanations, Guy, that David brought up there. One is that there's not enough movement among the people who have jobs. They don't want to move up. They're afraid to move to a different position. Things are kind of locked and frozen. He also brought up technology. So let's dissect those two things as possible causes of the situation facing young people today.
Well, first I think that to some extent that there, and I think David is right to bring up two explanations. There are a lot of explanations that are all mixing in. And in some sense, I don't like the term perfect storm, but maybe for college grads, it is a perfect storm. Yeah. They're being hit by a lot of things, and maybe somebody who's finishing high school is only being hit by one of these. I think one thing here, people that are later in their career are sort of staying put. Yeah, and I think that's a fun, and I think I love that metaphor of climbing to see the fireworks. Right now, it's a weak hiring market. Hiring is as low as it's been. Setting aside the pandemic, which is a brief anomalous period, hiring's the weakest in the United States it's been since 2013, 2014. There's just not a lot of spots. Everybody's trying to cram into them. People that have a job, they're at low risk of getting laid off. Even if they're unhappy with it, of course they wouldn't leave, because why would we take a risk?
Yep.
Quitting your job without something already being lined up. So again, it's like a bunch of people trying to fit through a narrow opening. And that's affecting a lot of people, college grads, affecting high school grads in their late teens as well. On top of that, and we're talking about technology. Again, I think it is somewhat early to start talking about big changes that AI is going to generate in the workplace. But it is true that companies are already using it. A lot of things they're using it for are the kind of things that you'd have typically asked entry-level people in profession, particularly in professional settings, to do, like certain kinds of basic writing, certain kinds of basic research. If not already, at some point, this is going to set up a challenge where those roles have to change. Yeah. Maybe they become more advanced. Maybe they take advantage of human skills. But right now, we're in this adjustment period, possibly early, where this is hurting college grads' prospects in a way that it does not necessarily hurt people that finish high school or get an associate degree.
Yeah, that's the work you did to prove yourself, and now perhaps it can be exported to AI. Although you say it's a little early to pinpoint that as the cause.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I mean, it's probably playing a role. I wouldn't necessarily bet that it's playing the primary role. It's part of the mix.
Yeah, and by the way, if you want to chime in, if you're a Gen Z job seeker or someone who loves one, and you're watching them out here in this market, what has been the most frustrating part of looking for a job right now? You can call in and tell us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And we have a Gen Z job seeker on the line, Jermaine from West Philadelphia, on the show. Jermaine, you're on Studio 2. Tell us about your search in this current job market. What has it been like for you?
Yeah, so in this current job market, just coming out of college, I've been searching and been looking around through LinkedIn, connecting with people through LinkedIn, connecting with people face-to-face, volunteering. So just getting experience pretty much has been like number one thing that I've been doing, within trying to get into the job market. And, when you have these connections, when you meet these people face to face and you're still not coming through with having a job, and, also, having potential for someone to, get you a job, is definitely kind of difficult for me with that. And,
Hey, Jermaine, can I ask you real quick, how many jobs have you applied for since graduating, and when did you graduate?
Yeah, so I graduated within summer of 2024.
Okay.
Just graduated recently. And how many jobs I applied for was between about three to five jobs I've been applying for.
Is that every week, every month, or total?
Yeah, so that's like every week, kind of. Just applying, looking, and applying, and connecting, and applying. So it's just that process of that.
And what is this doing to you, to your psyche, and emotionally and psychologically, as you have been trying to find this work, and every week diligently applying for more and more jobs, but not getting the type of response that you want?
Yeah, so the mental aspect of not finding a job, and just connecting with people, and then still not finding a job, has definitely been difficult for me. I'll say sometimes I kind of will get slumps, and then really kind of have to build myself up together kind of. And also, I would have to take breaks from, kind of applying so that I can get my, my mental together, because it can be kind of discouraging when you hear, you're not getting this job, or you haven't even reached the interview stage. Yeah. It's definitely difficult.
Hearing no over and over and over again. Well, Jermaine from West Philadelphia, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today on Studio 2. We wish you the best of luck.
Yes.
Thank you.
And let me read this email now from Catherine, similar perspective, but from the parent side. Catherine said, as a parent, it is heartbreaking to watch as my college graduate in STEM struggles to find work in a market driven by algorithms, little or no entry-level positions apart from internships, and few, if any, full-time job opportunities. She has spent a year sending resumes and receiving no response. I have never seen a job market like this, regardless of the economy. I was always able to find some sort of work. I want to now kick that to you, Mike Robinson, because this idea of sending out applications and getting nothing back, it's this weird situation now with the job application process, where you can send out lots of applications really fast because you can do these things online through third parties, but you also are very likely to hear nothing back at all, or very, very little back. It's not, you almost get less from each application. Can you maybe explain that dynamic a little bit, and what you hear from young people about it? You know, the idea of sending out hundreds and hundreds and kind of hearing nothing.
So you want to approach the job search effort in a targeted way. Many job seekers use, number one, their biggest mistake is they'll use one generic resume and they'll send that out to a gazillion employers. Yeah. And you need to tailor the resume to the job that you're applying to. That's number one. So that's a huge mistake that not just Gen Zers, but everybody typically makes that mistake by using just one generic form of resume. There are three formats of resume, thousands and thousands and thousands of styles. There's a format called chronological resume. There's a format called the functional resume. And then there's a format called the chronofunctional, which combines the best of both those worlds. Now, those are the three formats of resumes that exist, but you have to figure out which one is going to be ideal for you. And then once you figure out that format, how are you tailoring that resume to the job?
And my follow-up for you is this. What is the reaction on the employer side? Because if you got people who are able to send out hundreds of resumes through these websites, that means that on the other side, you're getting a lot more people applying for an individual job. How does that hurt the individuals who are applying?
So it hurts them in that if you're not targeting the resume and the application and the online application, because online applications are asking for similar information that you may have on the resume. So if that application doesn't have certain buzzwords, because there's a lot of resume and application reading systems out there.
So screening technology.
Correct.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you know, aware of that, your resume just goes into the circular bin and other candidates might be considered that might be a little less qualified than you because you didn't format and target your resume for that job and you didn't target your application for that job. You may be the very person they're looking for, but because you didn't do those nuanced things, other people might be considered.
So they're using like AI in some ways. They're not, because they're these employers, are they going through them one by one or are they using, they're using like technology, right?
So, some employers are looking at the resumes physically, right? They're looking at it, they're giving it an eyeball, human look. Some, many employers are using Resumex. That's an automated resume reading and applicant system reading a product that's out there. And so depending on the company, many are using those systems.
Mm. Ed, speaking of that, Stephen emails us, as a parent of two recent Penn State grads, go Nittany Lions, the most frustrating part of their job search is the lack of any response from online applications and the inability of applicants to actually speak with someone. That's a great point, Stephen. Guy Berger, I wanted to go back to something you talked about earlier. We're in this weird place, it seems like, where there's not a lot of hiring, but also not a lot of firing and mass layoffs. Usually when the economy is bad, companies contract and they lay people off. So I'm confused how we got here as an economy. How do we end up in a situation where there's not expansion, but also not contraction?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to remember is that the economy is not that bad. So compared to prior times, there's more, you know, if in similar job markets in terms of low overall unemployment, you would have simultaneously had both more layoffs. So people being more people, you know, unfortunately having their jobs ended by the employers and employers bring more people in.
Yeah.
The Great Recession, I mean, not the Great Recession, the pandemic recession, which was very brief, was sort of generating a lot of PTSD for employers because they laid a bunch of people off and froze hiring very aggressively, you know, in the spring of 2020. Then when the job market came roaring back, and it did very quickly by the standards of a deep downturn, they were suddenly caught flat-footed. They laid people off. Those people were gone, and they couldn't hire them back. It took a long, like, hiring had been frozen. It was hard to ramp it up quickly. Typically in cycles, hiring doesn't ramp up. And so they were caught flat-footed. And the main conclusion they reached from that probably is, you know, when things slow down, I just can't lay people off that quickly.
They almost sound like deers in the headlights here. They're just kind of confused.
And so they're kind of playing it much in a very risk-averse fashion, which is they're holding on to their workers. And, you know, that they can't grow their workforces very fast because the economy is doing okay, but it's not doing great. So essentially, they're cranking down on hiring, and in the past, that's happened for short periods leading up to recessions. What's interesting this time is we haven't. I mean, who knows with tariffs and everything else, but we haven't tipped into recession. We've just been in this, what some people call a
Holding.
frozen labor market for
Yeah.
quite a while, and it could go on for quite a while. Now, I think it's better not to have a recession,
Yeah.
but I think this is going to. Might be, if it goes on for another year or two or more, could
Yep.
be pretty traumatic to these youngsters that you're talking to.
And we're going to talk about that on the other side of this break, the social potential ripple effects of all of this, if this
Yes.
remains the state of play for a while. We're talking about young people and the job market on Studio 2. Stick with us, a lot more to talk about.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Before we get back to our conversation, big news. Our next Studio 2 On the Road event is coming up in just a couple days. We are coming to Wilmington, Delaware this Thursday, May 22nd, for a discussion with Mayor John Carney. He's been in politics in the state for over two decades, most recently, of course, serving as governor until he left that office in January.
And this is your chance to hear from Carney about what he's learned, about the pressing issues facing the state of Delaware, and his vision to revitalize Wilmington. You can head to whyy.org/events to register, and we hope to see you on Thursday.
We really do. It should be a fascinating discussion. We've got a good discussion happening right now. This hour, we're talking about the tough job market facing Gen Z college grads. We're asking you, if you're a Gen Z job seeker or you know one, what's most frustrating to you about this job market? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Or if you're on YouTube, drop a comment right there in the chat.
By the way, our two guests with us today, we have Guy Berger, an economist, formerly the principal economist at LinkedIn, who studies the future of work and of workers at the Burning Glass Institute. We also have Mike Robinson in studio. He is the director of the Community Hiring Initiative at Temple University. And I wanted to just, read a couple of comments we got from YouTube. Broza Fan says, kids who majored in sciences are having trouble finding jobs and getting into graduate school because of all the government cuts. We haven't talked about that a little bit. Also, Mary says, my adopted grandson has two master's degrees and is studying for his PhD. He got laid off 6 months ago and can't find a job. They say he is overqualified.
Let's bring in a caller now. This is Jared from Cary, North Carolina. Okay, that's not
wow.
usually where we get callers
I
from.
I love it, though.
Jared, you're on Studio 2. Hope the weather is good in North Carolina. And thanks for joining us here in Philadelphia on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
It's great. I'm a Philly expat, so
there
we're
you
looking
go.
Down here.
There
you miss
you
up here.
Love the program. Love it. So super quickly, I'm a father of a recent college graduate, so I do have a firsthand perspective on this. But I'm curious to get your perspective, collective, on the inordinate amount of student debt that exists with this population, with this segment in particular. I mean, it's untenable, right? We know how stressful that is. And so while we're aware of that debt and the psychological byproducts of it, we're also hearing, and I can't remember if it was Guy who said this before, or your other guest, sorry, that this market can be a little selective in that they're not prone to the lowball offers.
Mm-hmm.
That they take that personally as opposed to leaning into that and taking what they can get to help mitigate some of the issues with this systemic debt problem. Curious what the perspective is on that and if there's any lines being drawn there.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Jared. And Cary,
yeah.
North Carolina. So, Mike, you were the one that talked about the sort of maybe feeling insulted by certain offers or employers maybe having the upper hand and young people getting offers that just don't appeal to them. How does that interact with the debt conversation? What do you hear from young folks?
Let me talk about maybe preempting that situation.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I would recommend to any parent or child that's aspiring to go to school to, weigh their options. Always pick a school that's accredited, that's known in your professional interests, your major, and that's offering you the most money, because the deal today is to graduate with less amount of debt as possible.
Yeah.
And even though a lot of students and parents get excited that their kids are going to these marquee schools, the Harvards of the world and other brand name, big name schools, If they're not offering enough money to attract that student, I would consider other colleges that are well-known and accredited that may be giving more money so that you graduate with less debt. I graduated from a small state school, Clarion University, here in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And I work alongside with people from Penn, Harvard, Princeton, and other big names, you know, schools making the same money they make. And so, yeah, and I didn't have to go through getting saddled with 100K debt coming out of those schools.
But how does that impact there when you have $100,000 debt and you're looking for a job? I mean, a lot of young people and Gen Zers specifically may think they can't take the 15-hour or job or the entry-level job. They need more money just to be able to live.
And some are doing that poly work situation that I mentioned earlier, where they're working multiple jobs to pay down that debt and to make an eke out a living. So you have that situation where now I'm forced, because I have this major debt, where I have to take on more work responsibilities. Now, there are some options that can help and ease some of that, where if you work for certain organizations, like public service organizations, like if you work for the police, or the fire department, if you teach in an impoverished area, some of your debt or all of your student debt can be forgiven if you work X amount of years. And so that's an option. But again, that depends on your profession and industry choice.
Guy Berger, I wanted to ask you about how long the situation we're describing could remain, because you mentioned one possible explanation is that employers are just feeling kind of a little stunned and uneasy because of the pandemic. That feels to me like something that would go away in time. Like, you know, it'll sort of regress. The other thing you mentioned, AI, that sounds like something that will accelerate over time. So then I'm kind of left thinking about the employment situation for young people and wondering, is it going to remain like this for a long time, or is this a blip and it'll go away relatively soon, as soon as employers kind of get their arms around this new post-pandemic economy?
So first, the economists are terrible at predicting the long-term future. So I'm going to give a disclaimer before I actually jump into it and sort of violate my own warning. I think the first thing is I think that the cyclical factors themselves, when we think of cycles, where like cycles don't last a long time, they can last a very long time. Yeah. The terrible job market after 2009 was cyclical, and it lasted a very long time. And it was only until like 2016 or 2017 people started saying this is a good job market again. So I think this could go on for a while. And just because of cyclical factors. On top of that, with AI, here's my gut. I personally feel like employers aren't stupid. There are lots of long-run reasons why they're going to want to hire young people, because that's the future seasoned employees. Yeah. And it's going to be this sort of gradual groping in the dark to figure out how to restructure entry-level roles to use AI effectively rather than just automating that work. I don't buy the idea that employers are just not going to hire young people in the long run.
Because, you still need to get talent
in
the door.
In there, yeah.
Yeah, you need those. Those are your future. I mean, you're eating your seed corn if you don't do that. That could be a very painful, lengthy discovery process. We're still learning. I mean, if we're really thinking about it, we're still learning how to use AI, a technology that in its current form is very recent. It's not even 3 years old since the big ChatGPT launch happened. And we're still, the uses we're using it for are still very primitive. We're still making a lot of errors with it. It's going to take time, and we're eventually going to figure it out. But also, eventually, it's not very reassuring to people that are dealing with it right now. So what I would tell people is, like, you're going to have to be opportunistic. I mean, if you can find yourself be comfortable with this technology, you probably have a leg up on people that don't. And I know college students already use it. Maybe sometimes not constructively from what some of the stories we're reading in The New Yorker, et cetera. But I think there are I use it. And so I think there are productive use cases if you use judiciously and combine it with what makes you talented and special as a human and as an educated human.
Yeah. I want to bring in another caller. We've had Gary from Mount Airy on the line. Gary, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, three quick comments. I think the first most important one is that the most important thing in the world now is really to save her. Because at the rate drill baby drill president and driving our cars instead of using mass transit is putting CO2 and methane into the atmosphere, we're on schedule to have mass famines, droughts, epidemics, 100 times worse immigration and World War III in the next 10 years. Oh, that's according to science. That's some exaggeration. So spend at least this year or next year working to stop the fossil fuel industry from ending a world. Mm-hmm. You can always have a great career 2 or 3 years from now. This is the last chance we'll have to save the world. Number two is that if you're working in the nonprofit area, volunteer to do fundraising. If you can get fundraising at the top of your resume is going to rise to the top. It's a very easy craft to learn. The last point is that really the best jobs are not advertised. They're created. Find your passion. Find what's broken your heart, and you'll find your passion and then follow it. You can quickly learn lots of tricks to be able to live on almost nothing, from pet sitting. I started out doing this and because I really wanted to become a filmmaker back in the 70s. I found free housing by pet sitting. I got on food stamps. I traded videos of the elders telling their life stories for free housing.
Yeah.
And within a couple of years, I was self-sufficient.
Right. It's all about the hustle. Thanks, Gary.
Gary from Mount Airy. And so, you know, Mike,
Gary
I wanted
from
to.
Mount Airy. Yeah, I like that.
And so I wanted to ask you, Mike, some advice. I mean, you know, we heard from Jermaine earlier today, Gen Z has been looking for a job going on a year now. But it affects your psyche. Like, how do you keep it going and sort of find your footing? Because you need to get into the job market, because once you're in, you're kind of in. Mm-hmm. But it's the getting in that's hard.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I would recommend is that, you know, just pace yourself. It takes between 6 months to a year for the average job seeker to find work. So he's still within that time frame.
But, okay. But so a year is less than a year is not horrible.
Correct.
In finding a job. Okay, go
correct.
Ahead.
Revise your resume. Tailor it to the job that you're applying to. Mm. Don't use one generic resume to just send out to everything. Also, build rapport organically with organizations and people from organizations that you have connections with. So if you're in a fraternity, if you're in professional affinity groups, if you're a part of groups like that, connect with folks in those groups.
Humans, yeah.
That can possibly put you in the know of job opportunities. Build organically. Even reach out to your alumni association now that you're an alumnus of whatever school you graduated from and ask about on-campus scheduling of companies that come out to campus to interview so that you can, as an alumni, come to those in-person events and meet. And then, unselfish plug, we're hosting the largest job fair in Philadelphia on June the 6th. This is our 18th year doing it. We typically draw
Lee's Temple here, right?
At Temple University.
Yeah.
And you've been at a few of these events. We draw 100 plus employers typically and between 500 to 1,000 plus job seekers. And so all of the employers have been vetted. All of them are coming in tow with jobs across different industries and professions.
We're getting toward the end of the hour here, but Guy, you mentioned that sometimes these cycles can be long and it can take a while for things to kind of course correct. And then I just start thinking, like, a lot of people out there have borrowed against their future to get these degrees. And if there is a kind of, job starter market for 5, 10, 15 years, and they've accumulated all this debt, that feels just a little bit like a house of cards waiting to crumble. If this kind of holding pattern sticks around for a while and it's really tough for young people, what are some of the potential like social and economic ramifications for this generation and for just the value proposition of college in general?
Well, I mean, you know, in some sense, if you think about, I still think about it that you know, people call the 20 teens a lost decade because we had this long period of unemployment that affected, you know, in the worst of today's environment, it hit people without college degrees even harder than those with college degrees. Yeah. Now it's the flip side. And it's unfortunate, and it's going to have long run costs. I mean, these folks are going to have, you know, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it's going to hurt people's long run career trajectory sometimes. It's going to be disruptive. I think it could potentially shake what happens with college. It just takes a long time. I mean, I still love the analogy of people coming up to that platform to see fireworks. Eventually, people get the message they can't make it up. Yeah. But that's a long process. It could be right now, for example, the job market for people with associate's degrees is sort of a very particularly healthy part of the job market in contrast to people with BAs. Maybe we're going to see more people going get to their community college to get associate degrees. But that market could shift eventually too. And so I think it's just, you know, at some point people adapt and they change it, and some of the shine comes off going to college for some people, particularly those people for whom it would be very expensive, or they'd have to take on debt, and they choose other alternatives that maybe, you know, pay a little less, but also impose fewer costs acquiring it. And I just think that's the way it's going to play out. But I think these things are all very dynamic. I mean, I think it's very jarring to me, actually, that we're having this conversation about university degrees. You know, nobody would have expected it 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder whether in 3-4 years ago, we're suddenly talking about, you know what, people, college grads adapted, they're doing relatively well again. I think it's, I mean, I hate saying it because, you know, but sticking with the disclaimer that economists are terrible predicting the future, you know, how much of this is a cycle that lasts for a few years, yeah, and we're back to normal and everybody's telling people, you know, learn, you know, the old thing was learn how to code. The new one is become a software engineer that's really adept with LLMs. I don't know, but again, a lot of what people learn in college is adaptability. And I think that's, these are very savvy institutions that have been doing it for a long time. I think a lot of them will figure it out.
Yeah, they'll adapt, but there could be some pain that comes with the adaptation. Mm-hmm. I want to thank both of you for just your wonderful insights this hour.
Yes.
Guy Berger is the Director of Economic Research at the Burning Glass Institute. Thanks for your time, Guy.
Thank you.
And Mike Robinson is the Director of the Community Hiring Initiative at Temple University. Go Owls. Mike, thanks for the time on Studio Talk.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and by the way, we have Gail who says networking is key.
With like 15 exclamation points.
I know,
points.
That's a big part of finding a job. And I want to say thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And my name is Avi Wolfman. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. And again, I will say it, congratulations to the grads.
Yes.
You deserve it.